Welcome to Global E-Commerce Tech Talks. I'm your host, Michael LeBlanc. This podcast is brought to you in conjunction with the Global E-Commerce Leaders Forum. In this episode, I connect with my partners, Kent Allen and Jim Okamura, for a wide-ranging discussion on the global e-commerce trends they are hearing firsthand from the thought leaders that are speaking at the all-new Guelph Oktoberfest, which will deliver a mix of strategic insights and tactical cross-border to-dos about global retail expansion practices, how to prioritize the key operational aspects of your global e-commerce plan, and how to organize your team to execute them successfully. Next, we introduce several of the great speakers who will be featured in Oktoberfest, and then take a deeper dive into the Canadian export market, one of the keynote topics during Oktoberfest. Let's listen in. It's back to school season. It's an unusual back to school season. It's been an unusual 2020. Looking forward to and excited about upcoming Oktoberfest. How are you both doing?
Good. Thanks, Michael.
Doing very well. Glad to be back on with you.
Well, listen, let's jump right in. We don't have a guest on this particular episode, but we got lots to talk about, both from just some logistics and some exciting announcements around content, and then we'll do a deeper dive into what you guys are hearing as you put these together. I always found that was more than half the fun, sometimes all the fun plus, of doing large conferences. You just got to talk to such interesting people and what's on their mind. So we'll dip into a bit of that, and then we'll end off with a spotlight on my home country, Canada. We'll talk about what's going on up here, up north, in Canada regarding e-commerce. There's been some tremendous growth here in Canada, and that's kind of not an unusual story, I'm sure, but it's got, as always, some different characteristics. So, Jim, tell us what's going on for Guelph. So in our last episode, Kent and I were talking about how Guelph has moved to an online Oktoberfest event, and there's a couple of dates. So why don't you take us through the top line notes of what's happening?
Yeah, thanks, Michael. And we're really excited to get into our Guelph Oktoberfest series. So over three consecutive Thursday afternoons, that'd be East Coast time, we're going to be hosting the Guelph community in a virtual program that we are calling Guelph Oktoberfest. You know, we felt it was really important, Michael, to gather the community. I mean, we've been talking to so many, you know, people within, you know, the Guelph community, and obviously, you know, very unusual year, but certainly a lot of the people that we talk to in the cross-border and global e-commerce, you know, space, you know, have been doing a gangbuster, you know, business, right, and just trying to keep up, you know, with things. So, you know, we felt it was really important that we gather the community, we give everyone a chance to kind of hear from each other and interact, you know, with each other as well. So, you know, that's where, you know, the Guelph Oktoberfest, you know, concept just seemed to kind of make sense, you know, building on some of the virtual programming, you know, that we've been doing over the spring and summer of this year.
Well, right on. I mean, you together, you've built such a great momentum around global e-commerce. So notwithstanding the fact we can't all be there together in person, it totally makes sense to kind of continue that thought leadership and kind of discussion. And it, you know, reflecting on what you're talking about, you know, our back to our interview with Jeff Lord in our last episode, you know, it could be the best of times. It could be the not so best of times with, you know, with the outdoor economy in that category. You know, it could be the year for demand in terms of people getting out and getting out on the slopes. And it, you know, it's all kind of a bit of wait and see, but certainly there's no question that it's a great time to be talking amongst ourselves, so to speak, and with other thought leaders all around Guelph. So you mentioned, let's nail down a couple of dates. And by the way, I will put into the show notes for anyone listening or for those listening that they can find direct links for registration. But when are those two dates that we should talk about in October for the Oktoberfest?
So October 1st is going to be the first of our Oktoberfest, you know, dates, you know, followed by the following Thursday on October 8th. October 15th, you know, will be the third, you know, session. But today we're going to talk a little bit around, you know, both the October 1st and a little bit on the October 8th, you know, program to give the listeners a little idea of who's coming out to join us, especially amongst our what we think of as sort of an all-star lineup of, you know, some of the best Guelph speakers over the years.
Kent, why don't you, I'm looking at the first speaker, the keynote for October 1st. Why don't you take us through Tom Davis? It looks like you got Tom Davis. I think he's been on your stage this won't be his first time, but always fresh ideas. So take us through the first keynote, October 1st.
Michael, and to kind of address what Jim was saying, we're pleased that we're able to pull together the Guelph community for a virtual summit. One nice thing about this is we don't necessarily have to have a speaker on a plane in a building at a certain time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we're just thrilled that Tom is joining us again. This will be his third time keynoting since Guelph started 7-8 years ago. And he's going to really kind of kick things off. He's always provocative, and we're just going to really look at his new role. Right now he's with Cartier, and he's really kind of running both their digital and their omni-channel piece. So from a luxury perspective, we've certainly seen that as a product category that's seen some challenges and some huge opportunities at the same time. So he'll really open with an exploration of the rise of global e-commerce. He'll talk a little bit about how it's offsetting some of the financial negative impacts on store closures around the world. And I think another really interesting topic is just going to be how the traditional global retail wholesale distribution network is reacting to COVID. Certainly something that we've been talking about at Guelph for a couple of years now, this idea of digital first distributors, the rise of the marketplaces, whether it's Alibaba, whether it's Amazon, whether it's some of the regional marketplaces. We really see some of these guys starting to displace traditional retail wholesalers. And, you know, Tom will talk a little bit about what he's seeing from a luxury perspective. So, yeah, we're really looking forward to having Tom join us. I think the other interesting thing that we'll kick off with is just this idea of, you know, what is the loss of international travels, especially on luxury? You know, certainly, especially travelers from China are huge, you know, kind of in-store clients. So Tom will talk a little bit about, you know, how they're looking at innovations that are coming from China and how some of those innovations are helping them offset some of this, some of the challenges as far as international travelers and things like that. Sounds like business is going really well from the digital perspective. So we're really looking forward to having Tom kick things off and, you know, stir the pot up a little bit and set the tone for some of the other topics that we'll be discussing throughout, not just the first, but the eighth and, you know, into the months ahead.
You know, that discussion around tourists and people flying around, I mean, it really resonates with me. I did an interview last week, hasn't been put or broadcast yet on the Voice of Retail podcast with Claire Santa Maria, the vice president of Yorkdale, which is one of actually North America's top highest performing shopping malls. It's a fantastic shopping mall. But I know that a big piece of that, of their tourist traffic certainly was Chinese tourists who would come to Yorkdale because it's a premier mall and that's absent now. And in Canada in general, it's such an unusual time. Our border is closed with the US and that accounts for a tremendous amount of visitors. Particularly in the summer months. But, you know, I think what I'm hearing, and it'll be interesting to listen to Tom, is are you picking up some of that lost sales that would have come from travelers from China in digital, right? That it's happening, but you've got to flex to account for that. You know, such great shoppers and such great consumers, actually. We're missing that for sure in North America. But are we really missing it? In other words, are the brands able to take advantage of the work that they've done and is yet to do to optimize their position in the Chinese market? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the other interesting thing, as we were talking to Tom a couple of weeks ago, was just how they're reprioritizing their global market expansion plans. You know, it's kind of what he referred to as international market entry hacking. So I think this whole hacking theme is going to be one that will play throughout all the days, you know, because as we've heard over and over again, leaders are being asked to, you know, take their 3 to 5 year plan and turn it into a 3 to 5 month plan as best as possible. Right. The holidays are a big, you know, kind of question mark for a lot of people. We've heard some people really ramping up their marketing, some people dialing back their marketing because they're concerned that they just don't have the product to meet the demand, or, you know, maybe they don't have the shipping support as some of their carriers give them a heads up that, you know, there's only so much growth they can accommodate. So a lot of interesting topics out there.
I'm just going to jump in there because what I thought, you know, was really interesting with Tom Davis and you know, what he was saying, his priorities have shifted to has been on the kind of omni-channel side of things. right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, where, you know, he has been talking about how, you know, Cartier has really had to very quickly kind of put in place, you know, more omni-channel capabilities. And, you know, certainly that resonates with what we've been hearing, you know, not, you know, only globally, but certainly domestically. And, you know, we see this with so many companies that have had to very quickly ramp up, you know, their capabilities and where digital fits, you know, with their stores. And certainly the luxury, you know, sector is part of that. So, yeah, kind of looking forward to hearing more from Tom on that side of things as well.
Unpack that for me a little bit, Jim. Are we talking here things like curbside and BOPUS, buy online, pick up in store, when we talk about omnichannel? Is it that physical, or you know, what the luxury market is so unique, yet at the same time, it is benefiting in some ways from this broader adoption along the spectrum of e-commerce. I was chatting with the senior vice president of Saatchi Art, an art online dealer, and they're suffering because they can't have their art shows or fairs or festivals around the world, but they're seeing a big bump up in traffic on their site, which is so interesting. So unpack that for me a little bit. When you say expanding the luxury market, expanding their omni-channel, what are you talking
about? Yeah, you know, I think, you know, while it's still important on, in a sense, you know, the back end of the fulfillment of the order, so that kind of curbside pickup, you know, is certainly in play in luxury as well. I think, you know, what Tom was, you know, talking about was more on almost that front end, you know, discovery portion of the customer journey. How can they engage with and provide that same high touch, you know, service, you know, when people are not, you know, in the store. So I think just, you know, how they're allowing, you know, their associates to engage, you know, with consumers in kind of an omni-channel way, all the way through, you know, the journey to fulfilling, you know, that order and taking care of, you know, back end, you know, customer care and so on. So I think, you know, each sector is going to be, you know, really different, but that's where I'm kind of looking forward to hearing more from Tom on what are those things that, you know, are particular to the luxury sector.
Kind of a nice bridge or segue over to what I wanted to talk about beyond kind of the first and eighth, and we've got a logistics is first of all, tell us, give us a snapshot of who else we can expect to hear from, kind of a teaser, so to speak. You got some great names, tons of insight. And then funnest things about doing conferences is the fact that you kind of get into that. What are you hearing? Like you really have these great sessions. So I wanted to spend some time with both of you and delve further into that. What kind of trends are you hearing? What's important on everyone's mind? You know, I did an interview this morning with Canadian Press about what retailers are thinking about and how they're thinking about holiday domestically, you know, and it's so interesting along the lines of it's just a different year for a whole bunch of different reasons. But help me unpack that for the listeners about what you're hearing, and then of course that'll be demonstrated writ large on the virtual stage on October 1st and 8th.
As Jim mentioned earlier, we've invited a lot of our most popular speakers back. We've got Michelle Frank from Harman, who's spoken a couple times. Abby Whitmer from Revive Skincare was super popular last fall. Just a really cool story about, you know, what happens when a VC or private equity takes over a brand and reinvigorates it. Emma Lawson's going to be coming back. She's moved over to Huda Beauty, and she'll be talking a lot about their, you know, global plan, especially looking at the key role that social media and social marketplaces. We've probably got.
Yeah, I mean, Huda is such a phenomenon. That wasn't on my radar screen till the summer, and then I desperately was trying to get interviews with the folks at Huda, because they've got just a success story. They've just done an amazing thing. That's exciting that you can have somebody from Huda.
Yeah, you know, we've got Lily Verone from Forrester Research coming back, and mm-hmm. she'll be sharing some of her insights. The nice thing is we've got multiple people that are going to be really sharing some of the data that they're seeing, you know, more from mm-hmm. an industry or, you know, from a transactional perspective. Part of the theme of this is, you know, certainly the holidays and the Q4 are going to be extremely important, but I think most people have come around to this idea that this isn't just a temporary interruption and we're going to be getting back to the old ways of doing things, you know, by the end of the holidays. Most people are planning for this to be a significant change in not only the consumer globally, but the way that people have to run their operations. And, you know, as Tom mentioned, And we've heard it in some of the podcasts before, you know, thinking back to Nathan's quote about at New Balance, where they've, you know, e-commerce has gone from, you know, the sideshow to the main show. Yes. And Tom talks about how, you know, it was a complimentary channel, but that's not the case anymore. So, yeah, got some great people joining us throughout. We'll be looking at, you know, some data. We'll be looking, you know, starting the day with strategy, moving towards, you know, kind of operational things as well. We'll probably talk a little bit more later in the podcast about, you know, some of the stuff that we'll be doing with China. I know we're going to be focusing on Canada here in a few minutes. But, yeah, you know, as far as some of the trends, I do think that, you know, what I mentioned earlier about, you know, how do we plan for the holidays. I think one of the real questions is, are consumers dialed into the fact that if they really want a product, they might want to start shopping earlier? We've heard different things. You know, in fact, one of the speakers that's going to be wrapping up the first day, Jerry, who used to be the CIO over Specialized, really interesting guy, will be joining us to kind of wrap up the first day. Where we'll be talking about, you know, how do you scale gracefully, as he put it? How do you scale global e-commerce architecture? So, you know, we'll start with strategy. We'll kind of get down into the, you know, how does strategy interact with technology investments and things like that towards the end of the first day.
When you say Specialized, is that the bike manufactured?
That is indeed the maker of my, you know, the 15 stump jumpers that I think I've had over the years. So it's really the only bike I know. But yeah, really looking forward to that. But yeah, you know, Jared also brought up this idea of, you know, Orange Sunday, which is the first time that I'd heard of people thinking about, you know, kind of kicking off the day after Halloween, excuse me, being Orange Sunday this year. So, you know, it'll be interesting to also look and see what kind of lessons learned, you know, from some of the China shopping festivals. A lot of people are getting their plans together for Double 11 right now. So it's going to be an interesting holiday season. But as much as anything, we really want to kind of get people focused on, you know, whether this blip is now a new benchmark. Is you know, is the e-commerce activity we see today, you know, going to have to be looked at as the low water mark as we move forward, and how do you grow from this, you know, crazy growth that we've already seen? So lots of interesting topics there.
Well, it's one of the most overused things, and I'm always hesitant when I hear it, is this changes everything, right? And there's very, very few things that change everything. This might be one of them. And certainly, I think when I talk to retailers, they're adjusting to a world where this, whatever this is, COVID era, could be, you know, 18, 24, 36 months in some way, shape, or another. And the question on the top of their minds, the overarching question is, what of all these behaviors is actually going to stick versus, you know, what behaviors go back to the mean, so to speak, people start traveling again. And we've seen over history that people, you know, are pretty resilient. I'm amazed. I was looking at the U.S. economic numbers. I was amazed at how, I am amazed at how resilient the U.S. economy and consumer economy has been, and the Chinese economy and the global economy in the face of all this. So it's so interesting from that perspective, right? It's you know, what's going to change? What's going to stay the same? How have we moved forward? And what's going to move backwards when there is a vaccine or whatever that looks like, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, the interesting thing, you know, talking about data, I just saw an email out this morning from the Digital Commerce 360 guys talking about how Amazon's international operations became profitable for the first time in the second quarter. Now, they've always, you know, we all the way back to 13 years or so ago when we did the first international e-commerce benchmarking study. You know, that was when we were first pointing to, look how much of Amazon's business is already international. I think it was maybe half or 40% at that point. We were obviously looking at eBay more then than maybe people are today. But, you know, given that they've invested so much in their international growth over the year, especially recently in India, it's just really kind of a footnote, I think, that should not be overlooked, this idea that, you know, they've finally gone profitable on their international expansion. And a lot of people obviously look to Amazon. So, yeah, this whole international share of Amazon's revenue continues to be significant. I think international is now, you know, kind of a growing wedge, if you will.
Jim, I wanted to tap into your wisdom and experience. You've spent a fair bit of your career trying to understand not just digital and e-commerce and cross-border, but also the organizational impacts around all those things. Like, we kind of brushed by it, but these changes are tectonic in terms of how organizations have to structure. We've had a couple of guests on who've basically talked about it, said, 10 years ago, the e-commerce people were barely resourced and in a closet, and that for a little while they became the stars. And then the global folks were like, yeah, we'll get to global. Now it seems like global has taken another, come out and become a real factor. How do organizations flex? What are you hearing from the folks who are going to be on the stage that they're saying, here's what we've had to do in a very short amount of time to just create that organization that can take advantage of the opportunity or meet the challenges?
Yeah, it's been, such fascinating times for, so many companies to pivot the way they have with the shift towards, digital revenue channels. And, some of it certainly has been, what we would consider kind of temporary, bridge solutions of sorts, throwing bodies, at some of these, issues, whether that's, again, trying to tackle things like, curbside pickup or dealing, with some of the supply chain issues that we've been seeing for categories that have been hot, let's say. And that's why I give so many companies credit for just how they've been able to, not only survive, but really thrive in these, tough conditions. What we kind of expect to see, and I think this is just a broad commentary, I think, I'd say that digital transformation strategies in general is, we've made such amazing progress in such a short period of time. There's a period where I think, most companies are trying to find bandwidth to take a step back and say, what really needs to kind of be given priority in order for us to have, almost that consistent experience, going forward, instead of, these rough and ready solutions, that have been kind of put in place over the past, few months. So, we expect to see, it's why, as Kent, mentioned from Jerry from Specialize, again, talking about, the architecture that's needed. There's going to be, I think, a lot of, issues, from really that technology and operational, layers to say, are we ready to really drive the kind of volume that we're talking about now? A lot of these are the extend to the organization and people needs, and how do we make sure that as we've now ramped up and changed the strategy so drastically that we're not forgetting to align the organization to be able to do what we are promising to the customers.
You know what has struck me over the doing these, and what I love about doing this podcast, amongst other things, is what I learn, right? I learn so much. And, I reflect on the guests we've had, and it feels like the retailers that are operating in international markets are and need to be, with their DNA, more nimble, more flexible, like culturally oriented to sudden changes, right? Because when you do business around the world, dramatic changes can happen overnight from any number of ways. So it does feel that the group of folks who are often on your stage are really, acclimatized to kind of rapid change. Nothing exactly like a global pandemic, but they are more resilient. In other words, there's a resilience there that is, can take anything anyone throws at them from anywhere in the world, just builds a cultural resilience. Would you agree?
I mean, I certainly would agree with that, resilience or almost grittiness, that I think is so, required, right now, and yet I also think it does vary a lot, between companies. We were just talking to another one of our speakers, for Guelph Oktoberfest, and his move, from a more traditional, company with international growth through distributors, he's now shifted to a digital native, company. And again, just that agility is almost, built in from day one, with some of these companies, as opposed to, again, the many layers and complexity that you would see of traditional global distribution. So I think, this is where we're really going to see a lot of, winners and losers emerge out of, all these, changes is, who is, you know, really willing to step up and in that same gritty way, you know, figure out a solution. So it's going to really test, I think, you know, a lot of companies, you know, who may have been very set in their ways and more resistant to the change that's kind of needed to keep up, really.
It's been a great exploration in this episode. Let's the last kind of questions, the last minutes we have together. Let's talk about Canada. Oh, Canada. Well, there's a lot of things happening up north, which of course is global. You've got across a border. You've got different constituencies. You've got great interest, and there's been amazing things happening in the Canadian market. I often say that the Canadian market is has much more similarities and differences than the U.S. market, but there is a difference. There's a border. There's different players. Kent, you've been talking to some folks from Canada Post, I believe, about the research they've been doing and some interest in making sure the goods flow across the largest unguarded border in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. We're thrilled to have the Canada Post team back, and we're going to be jumping into the Americas in general on the first day, but most of the focus will be on Canada. I think of all the people that have reached out to us in recent months, either from, you know, kind of the consulting side of things or, you know, more along the Gulf side is, you know, hey, what's this new NAFTA? How does the whole USMCA, or I know, Michael, you guys have a different name for it north of the border
CUSMA.
There.
CUSMA.
Excuse me. Yeah.
Canadian-U.S.-Mexico agreement.
Exactly. So we'll just call it the new NAFTA to make everybody happy. But
NAFTA 2.0.
You know,
there you go.
When we were talking to the Canada Post folks and they're bringing back an updated research, you know, kind of to the point that we were talking about earlier, plan early, think early. So they said that their data shows that 32% Canadian shoppers will be open to shopping in October, which is interesting because I think what I've seen in the last two, maybe 3 years is a lot of the holiday shopping has actually moved into mid November, early November has even benefited. I've seen some articles like, is Black Friday even going to be relevant this year? Is Cyber Week going to be too late? So I think that's a very interesting piece. I think their data showed that maybe 42% had already shopped before Black Friday. So I think we've got holiday shopping really kicking off after Labor Day. So it'll be kind of interesting, especially given that the back to school season was, you know, different this year, given that kids aren't going back to school. So I don't know. I think there's going to be this collision of late back to school shopping, early holiday shopping. Oh, let's just have fun at Halloween. So I think October could just be a crazy busy month. And, you know, certainly the folks up in Canada are telling us that as well. Obviously, there's a lot of logistics and things like that. And, you know, but I asked myself, why am I talking about Canada when we've got two Canadians on this podcast? So I'm going to fade, you know, south of the border here and let you and Jim talk a little bit about Canada from here.
I want to turn this around actually to Michael, you know, since, you know, he's really the resident expert, you know, and certainly we've been hearing from lots of, you know, companies that their Canada business, you know, has been, you know, doing, you know, very well. What we're seeing, you know, from, you know, just the rise of, you know, digital shopping in general, e-commerce, you know, in Canada. Michael, tell us what do you think this means for kind of the cross-border experience? You know, are the consumers going to just embrace this even more so now that they've become so much more comfortable with e-commerce in general?
Yeah, I think yes to all. I mean, let me set the stage here. I was looking at Statistics Canada numbers for June, which is the most recent numbers available here. And in June 2019, just for framework, they track some e-commerce, not all. So this is more of a directional than it is scaling of the market for a bunch of reasons. In June 2019, Stats Canada reported 1.8 billion of e-commerce sales. So that's a year ago. In June 2020, 3.2 billion. Phenomenal growth. And of course, Canada's always been a little bit behind for a whole variety of reasons, again, beyond the scope of our podcast, the U.S. in terms of its e-commerce evolution. But, you know, it's on track to grow fast. Amazon's opening up, I think, their 13th warehouse in Canada. You know, they're growing fast. And I'll make an interesting point about Black Friday, Cyber Monday. That was a holiday, a shopping holiday that did not exist 10 years ago in this country. It was not a thing. Don't forget, it's not our Thanksgiving. Our Thanksgiving is much sooner, which means the characteristics of the event are also different, right? There's not the holiday. I know a lot of U.S. retailers, for example, are closing on the Thanksgiving day. And you know, just Kent, picking up on your part, you know, is it even relevant? It's more relevant year after year in Canada. Now, it's going to all be slightly different. Now, from a cross-border perspective, and you mentioned CUSMA, the new NAFTA, NAFTA 2.0, there was some changes to the de minimis. In other words, what you can bring in across the border, not just the U.S. border, any border into Canada and not have taxes or duties. And those levels have changed. They've gone up, not down. And the one so interesting thing that we don't know what's going to happen is the border is closed between our two nations. You cannot go unless you're in essential travel, you're a truck driver taking goods back and forth, or you're a Canadian citizen, you cannot come into Canada. And that's dramatic. I mean, same day cross-border trips, car trips, are down 97%. And that was one of the impetuses for Canadian retailers to adopt Black Friday, Cyber Monday, more Black Friday, that they saw tens and tens of thousands of Canadians streaming across the border physically to shop in the U.S. during Black Friday. Now, that's ebbed off over the years because Canada has a Black Friday and the currency rates are not that favorable. What is interesting is, what does that mean for e-commerce? In other words, I can't get there. I can't go to the United States, but if I can shop there, that's pretty interesting. You know, what plays off against that is retailers in Canada, and that's international brands as well. We've had 50, 60 international brands launch here in Canada. You know, you've got these things together. I talked to my friends at SCI, which is a third-party logistics company actually related to Canada Post. So Canada Post is kind of a trifecta of organizations, so to speak. You've got Canada Post, you've got Purolator, which is their courier, also does cross-border. And then you've got SCI, which is the third-party logistics. In fact, SCI was Amazon's third-party logistics company 20 years ago in Canada. Amazon didn't open up their warehouses themselves initially. So it's, you know, just to understand a bit of the way of the market. So, you know, there's never been a more dynamic time, anchored all in the fact that Canadians are shopping more online than ever before. And that's not unlike it is in anywhere else in the world, but it's just an order of magnitude, I think, greater, just because we're a little farther behind. And yeah, I also do work with Retail Council of Canada, which is like the NRF in the US. And we're telling everyone who will listen, shop early and of course shop often. This is not the year to wait. As you said, I'm already talking to retailers who are already seeing things like gift wrapping options being, you know, clearly what is being purchased is a gift. So I'm doing my own shopping, and I think you're going to see that newness and freshness. Now, the other unique aspect is Canada has Boxing Day, which happens right after Christmas. So, you know, this is a short discussion of a vast nation with some differences in terms of how it operates. But, you know, you've got Canada Post Expert is, you know, they carry, I don't know, 2/3 or more of e-commerce parcels. So they know what's going on, and they do some great research year after year talking to consumers. So that's it's fantastic that they're going to be part of Oktoberfest, because they'll really bring a nice insight into what's happening. I mean, you know, they're on the ground, literally and figuratively.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to, again, see more of, you know, their consumer-based research, and certainly data that we've seen, you know, from, you know, yet another, you know, speaker for Guelph Oktoberfest, Indy Guha from Signified. Mm-hmm. Their data really kind of shows, you know, that spike, you know, what was forecast as, you know, nice high single-digit, you know, growth, you know, of cross-border shipments into Canada, you know, for the foreseeable mm-hmm. years. This past 6 months, you know, is running at 8 to 10 times, you know, that volume. So certainly that's kind of been the reality over, you know, again, you know, the most of this year. But how that's going to really change going forward, I think, is really, you know, going to be a kind of a common theme throughout the Guelph, you know, Oktoberfest. We clearly yep. want to take yep. a look at the data and see where have we been. But, you know, as much as anything, and I think this is exactly what we've been hearing from the community, is that what does it mean going forward? You know, both, you know, yeah. near term for, you know, how do we optimize holidays, such a critical year, but, you know, longer term, you know, what do we really kind of need to put in place, you know, that really says we are, you know, able to, you know, meet the needs of, you know, our core customers.
And I'll bring this episode to a close, just kind of as I started it. I think that very question is why events, thought leadership events, and bringing people together is so vital, because we can all be like Les Nessman from WKRP, stick our head out the window and judge, it's sunny, it's raining. We can see what's happening today. Seeing around a corner, seeing what's happening next, that's going to take a lot of people with a lot of experience and sharing that. So I'm really looking forward to Oktoberfest. Ken, you would bring us home. Tell us once again the dates and where to register and all that great stuff.
I'm still floored by Les Nessman making the podcast. definitely a name from the past.
Johnny Fever next.
I was sitting there. It's like, what was the other guy's name? I remember the receptionist, of course.
Yes.
But so didn't get around to talking about October the 8th. Maybe, Michael, you'll have us back and, we'll get some speakers from the October 8th program. Again, that's one where we're going to be focusing right out of the gate on, lessons learned from Canada. Another big theme throughout Oktoberfest will be what are the lessons that some of the global e-commerce leaders have learned as they've expanded into international markets. How can they bring some of those lessons back home to optimize the U.S. market?
Yeah, right on.
At the same time, how can it help with some of this market entry hacking and market reprioritization that people are going through right now? So, once again, go to globalecommerceleaders.com, click on the find out more information on Oktoberfest. Just look for the big platter of beer glasses there. We're trying to bring some lightness or some lager into the October. So, really looking forward to pulling the community together. It's a bummer we can't be face-to-face like we've been doing for the last 7-8 years. But we really just want to thank all the speakers that have volunteered to kind of share their expertise and come together over the days. So October 1st, October 8th, why don't we talk about October 8th maybe on an upcoming podcast? We can dive into some of the interesting stuff that Gary Penn, who's the global VP of digital and e-commerce at Nixon, is going to kind of kick things off with us. Jeff Lord, who we've had a podcast recently with, suggest you guys check that out. Deborah Weinswig is going to join us from CoreSight, probably one of the top retail analysts in the nation right now. So just really looking forward to kind of diving into some social topics as well with Doug Jensen from Estee Lauder, really sharp CRM data analytics guy. So, too much to talk about because I know we got to wrap up here. But Michael, thanks again for having us and look forward to kind of building up more podcast teasers, if you will, to help promote Oktoberfest. So thanks again for spending some time with us.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. And Jim, great to speak with you as well. We could go on for hours talking about the Canadian market, you and I, and we don't need to because it'll be a great session. Sounds like a great session coming up October 1st. And absolutely our next episode, episode 9, we'll get into the second day and basically go into that and more about what you're hearing. So for now, gentlemen, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Michael. Until next time.
Well, that's a wrap on this edition of Global E-Commerce Tech Talks. If you like this podcast, you can subscribe on Apple, iTunes, Spotify, your favorite podcasting platform. Please rate, review, and be sure to recommend to a friend or colleague in the retail cross-border commerce industry. I'm Michael LeBlanc, founder and president of Emmy LeBlanc Company, Inc. You can learn more about me on www.emmyleblanc.co, and you can learn more about Global E-Commerce Leaders Forum and the Oktoberfest series coming up at www.globalecommerceleadersforum.com. Until next time, have a safe week.